Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We highlight the Latinx presence in the comic book industry as creators, characters, and fans.
Join us as we talk chisme, comics, fandom, and beer.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 212, that's 212. Welcome. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Hello. Hi. I am recovering from my most recent physical therapy appointment that I had today. I've been going to physical therapy. This is my third week for my ankle. For those of you who may not know, in March of 2018, I broke my ankle. And it still gives me problems. And since I run, and I am training for the LA Marathon, which is going to happen in 3 weeks, I, asked my general practitioner to give me a referral to go to PT. Excuse me. And I also mentioned to my general practitioner that I have a TMJ issue. So the muscle in my jaw is so tight, and I have been told by my dentist that I clench my teeth at night or that I grind them. I don't think I grind them, but I definitely catch myself even during the day clenching my teeth. And it gets so bad sometimes that the pain radiates all the way down my shoulder, into my back, and into my skull. I went to the dentist thinking I had a cavity and that I was going to have to do root canals, all on the left or right side of my face. But anyhow, long story short, they gave me a new physical therapist today that I'd never seen before or met before in my life. First of all, Deborah, my other physical therapist, didn't even tell me she was breaking up with me. I was just faced with this new person today, and he shakes my hand, very nice, very cordial, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna start light and increase the pressure, and you tell me when it's too much. I almost died. Oh my God. I told Eddie it was like he was going to puncture his finger through my cheek and go into my mouth from the outside. He was doing it so hard. And then he actually found muscles in my neck that I never even knew that I had. And it was so close to a nerve that my fingers were twitching when he did it. And even touching it right here, right now, it's so sore. But oh my God. Now I kind of have an idea of what being masochist is like, because the pain was so intense and it hurt, but it felt so good.
Hello, welcome. Anyways, we'll brush that over. I'm glad you're finally seeing someone for it.
Yes.
And that they were able to help.
Oh, my goodness. And then he starts working on my ankle, and he's like, you're so tight in your calves. And it's because my ankle doesn't have full range of motion. Uh-huh. And so he's like, I'm going to work on it. He's like, just go ahead and lay on your stomach, and here's a pillow. I said, to scream into. And he started laughing. He's all, whatever works. Oh, and that hurt too. It was so painful. But honestly, I think that's the best physical therapy appointment session that I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
So, but I'm very sore.
Sorry, Deborah.
Yeah, sorry, Deborah. But I'm so sore.
I recently started doing like self kind of doing this just mm-hmm. to, and yes, I woke up the night because I go hard. I don't know why. I'm just like, I want fast results. But the next day it's like, ooh, it's tender. What the fuck? Oh yeah, that's right. I did that like for like an hour. I would pause though, but still, yeah, I get what you're saying though, but I haven't seen.
Yeah, that's me. When I have the pain or like I can feel just tension in my jaw, I'll like sit here and like massage up here and down here. I had no idea. I mean, it makes sense, but in my mind, I had no idea that this was all connected down here and in my back and everything. And today when he was massaging down here, kind of in my shoulders, I could feel it in my jaw. I'm like, you know, these people are so knowledgeable. Obviously, they went to school, but of just how everything works and is connected. And it's just amazing. And it's, I tell all of my running friends that even if they don't think they need it, go to a physical therapist. Most runners have some kind of tweak or issue or pain. Most people, even if you're not runners, have some issues with pain or back problem or hip problem, or the older you get, the more pain you have. Go to a physical therapist. I cannot recommend it enough. And if it's a good physical therapist, they will give you exercises to do at home to help you to alleviate that pain.
Mm-hmm. There's this guy that I follow because I had realized, and I had talked to you guys about this before, about how I could feel like a numbness in my fingers when I would like wake up or if I would lie a certain way. But then I started like recently like following like this a few people actually who like recommend like stretches and stuff like that. And one of them recommended doing something like basically like this, like go like this and then clench your fingers and then do this and then like this. And tell me why it fucking hurt the first few times I did it. I was just like, what the fuck? And then now it doesn't hurt as much. But like after I do it a few times, I can definitely feel it. But no more numb fingers.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And so I'm like, one, they're like, it could be a sign of carpal. I'm just like, shut your mouth. I'm not on the computer enough anymore. But two, I'm just like, I gotta. Every week I say it. I gotta work out more. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. When I was in college, I spent a good 3 months with numb fingers. I had no idea what caused it. I honestly thought that I was diabetic and that the
tell me why I was thinking that too.
Yeah, and that the circulation had already gone away from my fingers, and I was not. I'm not lying. It's funny now because, I mean, now I am diabetic. Back then I wasn't. I was in the middle of the night because I woke up and I'm like, what the hell? And it was scary. And I'm in my 20s. I don't know anything about anything. I'm in the bathtub crying because I'm convinced I have diabetes and my arm is going to fall off. And it just was like that for about 2 or 3 months. And then it just miraculously went away. And sometimes if I sleep wrong, I'll also get it. But yeah, it was just probably a pinched nerve or something.
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing that on, like, when I'm like, find myself doing nothing or at work, I'm just so like, and then, but cause yeah, it sucks.
Yes. Bottom line is, doesn't matter if in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, aging definitely brings with it less mobility, less flexibility, and it is so important for you to stay active, stay flexible, and just keep your health a high priority.
Yeah, definitely. I actually do type all day, every day for work, like constantly, and I have to have the chair a certain height or else my shoulders start hurting, and I have the trackball mouse.
You just said that and I just remembered my shoulder.
Because I have the regular one, the pain will extend from my elbow to all the way to my shoulder and up the back of my head. So the trackball is like, if it wasn't for the trackball, I wouldn't have an office job. But for the new year, I have a lot of books that I get on sale, like if I'm at Ross or wherever and I see a nice book, you know, where you can write in it and journal and all this stuff, I'll buy it. I never buy them full price. I always buy them on sale. But because of that, I have like 5 or 6, maybe 10 blank books.
Five, six, 10.
So this year I said, you know what? I'm just going to start writing my thoughts down. And even if it sounds stupid, eventually maybe I'll get a writing pattern, you know? And so the other day I got really inspired. I was watching the show and all of a sudden, like all these thoughts started coming to me about how I grew up, how I handled my first relationship and how that may have affected all the rest of my early 20s. Anyway, it was deep. Okay. It was like this big revelation. And so I started just writing. Tell me why the next day my middle finger, it's still sore. Okay.
Oh my God.
because I type all day, but like I don't write like paragraphs. Mm-hmm. So now that I actually was using like a pen and writing a bunch, it started getting sore, and right now my middle finger's sore. I'm left-handed, and so it's just on my knuckle area, and it's going up into my finger. So I'm just like, maybe I should do those exercises Jen is talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't write in the book every day, but I definitely want to finish it. You know, I mean, you buy these things, you want to use them. So that's what I'm doing right now. But yeah, definitely aging just really messes you up. And something as simple as like writing, actual writing, can fuck you up for the next day. It's so crazy.
Yeah. And depending on how you hold your pen too, or what it is that you're using your pen writing to, that can fuck you up too.
Yeah, because I noticed that at the beginning of the writing, I was like really passionate and things started flowing, that I was really pressing hard, and then I had to like relieve some of the pressure on the pen and paper, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Your finger hurts from writing. What the hell? That's just insane. All right, guys, now it's time for Chisme de la Semana, and I got some chisme. I don't know how you guys are going to handle it. I don't know if you guys have even heard of it, but there has been some early photograph releases of the reboot of the Crow movie with Bill Sarsgaard as...
Yes!
Right?
I saw it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and there's...
I don't know how I feel about it yet.
Okay, yeah, a lot of people are very negative on it. Everybody says, oh, he looks like the Joker, the new Joker, the one played by... God, what is that guy's name? With
Joaquin Phoenix?
Heath Ledger?
No, the most recent one with...
I
forgot his name.
I picture him, but I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, I don't remember his name.
Who was it?
I know he played John Catalano in My So-Called Life. Jake Gyllenhaal?
Wait.
No, not Jake Gyllenhaal.
No,
I know people are like, what the hell? What the hell?
They're yelling at us right now.
The guy from 30 Seconds to Mars.
Yes, that guy.
going out with... who's he going out with? Was he going out with... No.
Well, I've never seen it, so I have no idea. But continue. So
they are posting side-by-side pictures of Bill Sarsgaard's The Crow and The Joker.
Jared Leto!
Yeah, thank you! Jared Leto. Yes, thank you. And there, as he is in the Joker with all the face tattoos, and you know, like I get it. Like I know that they're trying to make it for this generation. So, the re-envisioned Crow has face tattoos and stuff like that. But if you see the picture that they released, it actually looks like James O'Barr's. Rendition of the Crow, which is where the Crow came from. James O'Barr was the writer and artist of the Crow. So I'm like, guys, he looks just like the original comic book. And they're like, no, he has face tattoos. And I was like, okay, well, you know, let's not gatekeep the Crow. Okay. I know the Crow perfectly.
Fair. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, the Crow was perfectly envisioned. Executed. It's a cult following with Brandon Lee. I mean, that is an amazing movie. Followed by
banger soundtrack.
Yes, followed by an amazing soundtrack. So all I have to say now is, okay, Bill Sarsgaard is an amazing actor. He played Pennywise in the movies It, the new reimagining of those as well. But he is an amazing actor.
Tall and lanky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I approve. I'm just going to, you know what? I'm just going to let it sit. And I'm excited for this.
I'll watch it.
The only thing that I hope that they don't mess up is they need to have a an amazing soundtrack, because I think that is also something that you want to have in your Crow movie, because that I think is just part of like what made the Crow so amazing, you know, such great artists and stuff. And even some of the artists on the soundtrack played Eric in the movie after Brandon Lee died. Of course, they didn't show mm-hmm. it was like silhouettes, like when he was playing guitar on the roof. That was somebody else. That was one of the artists that was part of the soundtrack. I forgot who it was. Mm-hmm. But that's one chisme. The other one is Blade, the new Blade, has been delayed to November of 2025. I don't know. I feel a little bit sketchy. I hope that they get their shit together. And they have some great actors. So hopefully, I mean, everybody's like, fuck that, I'm with the Snipes one. I don't want anything new. Like, you know, Snipes was it, you know. And again, we gotta bring these things to the new generation. I mean, come on, guys.
I guess, but also the thing that I'm hesitant about is that it's definitely gonna be Disney-fied. Like, I think that's my that's my biggest concern. Like, are they gonna make it rated R or is it gonna be PG-13?
That's what I was thinking as well. Disney didn't stray away from a rated R Deadpool.
Well, so it hasn't come out yet, so we'll see.
But just giving it that rating, I think, is hopefully a positive. But I would definitely think that Blade would need to be rated R to be accurate, not accurate, to be, I don't want to say realistic because vampires don't exist.
Wait, what?
But hey, true,
you could have fooled me in freaking, what was it, like freaking 1998, or I don't know when the fuck that movie came out, and I should not have seen Blade when I was that young. Like, my God, did it leave an impression?
But I mean, what were those all rated R? I mean, there's a lot of violence and blood and death in Blade movies.
That's true.
So I mean, when you're dealing with vampires, I mean, is Twilight rated R?
Yeah,
I have no idea, but hopefully that is the case.
1988, I was right. Oh, my brain, she works. Definitely should not have seen that movie, but here we are.
But there's been a lot of delays for a lot of projects because of that writer's strike. And then I think that even when everyone came back, everything was just so far behind that I'm not surprised that things just keep getting pushed back. So that sucks, but hopefully it gives them some opportunity to make a good movie. And I'm tired of everybody complaining about Marvel movies and TV shows. I don't know. I didn't see the last few that came out, even on I haven't seen Loki. I haven't seen, what was the Echo?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it is rated R.
And then I think there might have been something else that I haven't seen yet. So I'm just behind. But everyone just keeps complaining about it. And I think they just aren't giving them a fair chance.
I mean, I saw Echo 3 times the whole season. It was so good to me. I thought it was great. I actually want to start learning sign language, or at least a little bit. And I was signing when I was watching that because I wanted to learn. It was just so inspiring, and I thought it was great. And so I don't know why people complain about that, but I think every project needs to be given a chance for sure. Mm-hmm. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. Just move on. All right, guys, now it's time for On My Radar. Kristen, what is on your radar?
Speaking of Marvel, On My Radar is a new Ms. Marvel book. It's not out till March 6th, and which means I didn't get a chance to read it. But when I saw it, I was like, oh, I'm going to talk about this on my radar so other people can get it on their radar and hopefully get a copy of it, especially if you're a Ms. Marvel fan. Because this book, basically, it's Ms. Marvel Mutant Menace. So this book is basically going to be where Kamala officially comes out to the world as a mutant and a member of the X-Men. And unfortunately for Kamala, she is about to find out that being mutant is not necessarily always looked upon favorably. In the canon right now for X-Men, there's a lot of negativity against mutants. There's a lot of laws being passed against mutants, so much so that they had to create their own planet, world, whatever, Krakoa, to live on and be in existence so that they weren't hunted down. But the interesting thing about this story is, as an Inhuman, Kamala was kind of like a hometown neighborhood hero. So she is going to be very, very taken aback by how her community is going to turn on her because now she's a mutant. So I thought that that was an interesting take on this story. I love Ms. Marvel and Kamala as a character. And the interesting thing as well about this book is that it is written by Iman Vellani, who is the actress who plays Ms. Marvel in the TV shows. She co-writes it with Sabir Pirzada, but she has been writing Ms. Marvel. And as we all know, and we talked about when that TV show came out, what was it, a year, 2 years ago now? Iman really was a comic book fan and a Ms. Marvel fan, which kind of put her to the front of the line of actresses who were trying out for that role because she knew the character so well. And she knows her X-Men history so well. So much so that Kevin Feige is enlisting her. This is Cheeseman 2. It's being talked about and whispered that he's enlisting her to actually help to write and be more active in writing the movies as well that she's involved in, that her character is involved in. So this is Ms. Marvel Mutant Menace, coming out March 6th, written by Iman Vellani and Sabir Pirzada, and the artist is Scott Godlewski. And you can find it at all of your local comic book stores.
That is super awesome.
So is she just not an Inhuman anymore?
Nope. She died. Remember? Did you remember? She died. She died.
And she came back as a mutant? Like, what the...
Yes.
No, I stopped reading. I just
stopped. So she died, and the X-Men, the... who was it? I can't remember who it was that actually, on Krakoa, they created the ability to be able to bring back people from the dead. And so obviously that opens the door for a lot of characters, but, when Ms. Marvel died, it was very, very widely and highly speculated that that was what was going to happen, to kind of put it in line for what's going on the TV show, because in the TV show, she is a mutant. And so she died and then she came back, but she came back. I think there was some storyline there that, maybe kind of gave some background of her having mutant genes. I read Death of a Friend or Fallen Friend, but I didn't read the storyline moving up to that. So I'm just kind of talking from what I remember customers talking about who were reading it.
Everything you're saying right now makes me never want to pick up a Marvel book ever again.
There were a lot of people who were upset about it. I was upset about it when I saw it in the TV show, because that Ms. Marvel No Normal book was so, like, it has a special place in my heart. I love it so much. And to be able to read a story of a teenager who is unsuspecting of what her life is that she's an inhuman, and then the teragenesis happens unsuspecting, and she wakes up, and then she has to try to figure out who she is, like, as a,
she turns into like Ms. Marvel, like,
yeah,
that book is like that, literally, that, like, the young event, that 2012 2013 era superheroes of like Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, Young Avengers, those were all my like reintroduction to comics. Mm-hmm. And I love them so, so much. And now that we're here, and I'm just like, I never want to fucking touch another comic book ever again. Just leave me. Leave me alone. Leave me alone to this perfect era of the perfect.
I'm honestly right there with you. When I first started working at the shop, it was Ms. Marvel, Squirrel Girl, Laura, New Wolverine, New Wolverine. Mm-hmm.
Almighty Thor.
Yes. Jane Foster's Thor, and then the what's the cat one? Patsy Walker, Hellcat. And then, and also like She-Hulk, and
Silk
and Spider-Gwen, also Jen, Spider-Woman being pregnant, and oh my god, all those storylines, I was like, is this the freaking golden age of comics and women characters? Mm-hmm. Like, I loved it. I read it so voraciously every week. Mm-hmm. And I would get into fights every week too. Yeah. Every week. With customers complaining about woke characters or all of that nonsense. So
yeah,
it's
I remember when I was working at Jeffrey's, and one guy made me cry. That's, and like, terrible. Keep in mind that I was like 19-20 at this age, and I was like, and it was like a fucking 30-year-old man. I, like, now that I think about it, I'm just like, oh honey, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth the headache and the heartbreak and the, like, and the everything. But like, I was like, those books, I was so passionate about them too. And now I'm just all like, fuck this. Aww. Like, I'm good. I'm done. I don't know. Like, it's not like Marvel cares about my money anyways. So, oh, what a time.
So I still enjoy Kamala Khan's story. So this actually was interesting to me, the way that they are approaching it. But yeah, I also am still salty about what they did to her as a character. So that, mm-hmm. that is on my radar.
All right, guys, now it's time for our book review. What are we reviewing today?
So today we are reviewing Watson and Holmes.
Ta-da! Ooh, nice. Yes.
So it's actually, I didn't know this until I started reading it, but it's basically five short stories compiled into one graphic novel.
Same. It's an anthology. And I was mad. I complained about it to Eddie even.
Oh. Well, I actually saw the chapters and the writers and artists, and I'm like, oh, it's different writers and artists for each chapter. So I went in completely prepared to see different renditions of the same characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I saw this page, I looked at the page, and I still didn't know.
I skipped it. I was just like, I'll read who it is later. And then I realized, I was just like, one, I realized that the writing styles changed.
Yes.
And two, that the artist, usually if the artist changed that in a small book, that makes sense to me, because sometimes they either want to give like other artists a shot, or they just don't have the pay to pay like one full, like one artist for a full book. Mm-hmm. Like that,
right?
That makes sense to me. But then I realized that the writing styles also changed, and I was just like, okay, I'm gonna flat out say it, not all of the stories in there were good. But I want to say, okay, three of them were really good. Mm-hmm. Three of them I actually really, really liked. The other two, I was like,
I had the exact same, reaction. And the funny thing is that I didn't even, I'm so bad at, you guys know me. I always am saying how I'm rushing through. I'm just reading the words. Like, I didn't even realize that they were different writers until probably story, well, actually after story number two, because I read the back matter of that story and I'm like, oh, it's so like, okay, this makes sense to me now. It's a whole bunch of different stories, but even though it was different stories, I thought that second story was the only one that was written by someone else. I still didn't realize that it was, well, other people.
One, two of them, and this is probably the ones that, because there was some continuity, I think like two or three of them did have like the same writer or the same artist.
I did notice there was some continuity, some little things that were stuck in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably whichever, like, the writer or the artist was the same one. It's really funny because, like, there was one where I think the artist or whichever chartist they were really finally got it full into this, and I want to say it's probably issue number 3 where I really liked the artwork. The artwork was like really nice and polished. It was either 3 or 4, not 2, because okay, now I did not like issue number 2 straight up. I did not like it.
Really? That was my favorite one.
I thought it was too convoluted. Really? I thought it was too like, it felt like it was trying to be Hounds of Baskerville without any of the Hounds of Baskerville references. So I was just all like, this sucks.
Oh wait, no, I'm lying. Chapter 1 was my favorite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think chapter 1 was a really good way to like really break into it, and I thought it had a really good message. And it was really well done.
Well, before we keep going on, I just want to explain to people that Watson and Holmes is basically the most famous dynamic duo in the world, John Watson and Sherlock Holmes, back to solve multiple cases for the police and private clients in desperate need of answers. So this is Sherlock Holmes and Watson in Harlem. So this is a book that was published by Fair Square Comics, whose tagline is Comics from the Rest of Us. So they specialize in books that are written by and about marginalized creators. And this is part of the Noir is the New Black series. So just a little background on that.
Yeah, I actually liked the different artwork. I actually went in, like I said, I knew that there were different artists and different writers for each of the chapters. And so I knew that from the get-go, so it didn't really affect me. And I actually enjoyed each of the different types of art that was depicted in this book. I have many points that I would like to share about the artists, but I mean... honestly, I don't really want to go into it because they all have their own style, and I liked each style for their own individual style, is what I'm saying. It's like I knew from the get-go, and so that it didn't affect me transitioning to the second chapter or the third or the fourth. I had points in each of the chapters that I liked. I liked the language of Holmes. I thought there were some points where he was a little bit kind of funny in a sense. Like he would make a joke, maybe not trying to make a joke, but it was funny. I actually chuckled at some of the dialogue. So I thought that was really clever. I enjoyed the different writing styles because, again, I went in knowing that there were different writers and artists. And I think that made a difference in how I enjoyed this book in general.
So I agree with Jen. That second one was very convoluted. I feel like the stories that I enjoyed were where the story was very, not simple, but the dialogue was a little bit more to the point. And I felt like there were a couple of issues that were so wordy and so just like, over the top, and I would finish it and I'm like, I don't know what I read, like, and but I just kept going. And then the next issue would be like, oh, okay, this is actually a cool story, this is interesting, okay, I like murder mystery or just mystery whodunit type stories, so I was in on that. But the fact that they were different writers, other than the Brandon Easton, and he actually wrote a different one in here too, but other than the Brandon Easton one, I didn't realize it until afterwards, which, and then I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But the first one, the Brandon Easton one, actually was an Eisner Award nominated story, and I can see why. It was really well done, and it specifically dealt with sex trafficking, there is a author's note at the end of his issue talking about why it was important for him to write this story. And as somebody who actually used to work with young girls who were trafficked, I found a lot of what he had to say in the story and in his back matter to be very kind of realistic and true to what really does happen out in the streets with people that this happens to. So I really, really enjoyed it. And he gives organization information about three organizations who do work with sex trafficked individuals, and giving you the opportunity as a reader to, if you wanted more information or wanted to support the work that those organizations do, that you could do that.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really, really cool that they added that in as well. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like virtue signaling or anything. This was something heartfelt and something that he felt like he could give a voice to. And I thought that was really, really good. It also helps that the writing, it literally felt like I was reading an episode of Law and Order.
Yeah. Yes. I thought of Law and Order a couple of times. That's funny.
like in my head, I could hear the theme music playing. Yeah. These are the stories.
Yes, absolutely. And
it's SVU. Yeah.
Law and Order, SVU. And it did. So if you kind of like that kind of like style of writing, or like kind of a murder mystery, or like kind of like almost like police procedural, or you just like Sherlock and Holmes, I think you definitely would. That first issue definitely knocks it out of the park. It was really, really good. It was really, really well done. And I think it had like a special poignant message in it too. Some of the language, to me, like, it's part of the story. It's part of like how people were referred to. And now it's definitely like considered a slur and offensive. So there is some like, I want to say dated language, but I'm not going to be offended, because that is how it is. That is how some people still like kind of sell their services too, as well. So, there is I guess a trigger warning would be outdated language, possible slurs. Yeah. But it's still really well done.
You know, is there even one here for the first story? I didn't see that.
There isn't. Definitely, I think, needs a trigger warning.
Yeah.
Because like we said, there's definitely like sexual trafficking, and like in other issues, there's like definitely like a rape that is gonna happen or something like that.
Yeah.
Sexual assault. There we go. So they do not hold back. Thankfully, they didn't like actually show it, because then I would have been really icked out. But it is definitely very, very heavily. It is outright said and like referenced. So, but it's I did not like the second issue, because, like I said, okay, Sherlock and Holmes, there's been hundreds and thousands, maybe not thousands, but there's definitely been hundreds of different adaptations and reinterpretations. I at the height of it, the BBC Sherlock Holmes one, that one was really, really good until that last season. And then Elementary.
The one where Watson was the Asian woman, the hot Asian woman. That was a good one.
I love that one. That one was really, really good.
Me too.
And has there been a recent one? I mean, there's the Robert Downey Jr. movies, which I also love.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
I do like those too. But it's like, it's public domain. It's a public domain story, and it's been reinterpreted and re-envisioned millions of times. So why not as people of color in, or black people in
Harlem?
Harlem? Yes. Which, yeah. And I also didn't like the second issue because for like the first issue and then the later issues too, because as I was reading them, they're not Sherlock Holmes and like John Watson, and they're like trying to like we're playing as being these people. Whereas in the second story, they kind of reference are like, oh, that Sherlock Holmes wannabe, like, okay, like you're ruining the immersion here right now. Is he actually like Sherlock Holmes re-envisioned, or is he pretending to be Sherlock Holmes, and Sherlock Holmes is Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's like this story exists, and he's just a guy pretending to be like, or trying to be like Sherlock Holmes, and he changes his name to Sherlock Holmes. Like, and that really ruined like the immersion for me as well. And then it was the whole like I'm trying to like separate the drug, like make the courage, or like make a courage drug or something. Like, I'd have no idea. I literally did not know what the hell was going on besides like some weird like medical shit.
Right. I didn't know what was going on with that one either.
Yeah, like, and I reread it too, and I'm just all like, like it's. I mean, if you've read any like of the like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes, there's definitely stories. There's definitely repeating characters. There's the like the Moriarty character. There's Irene. There's the stories themselves, of like classic like the. Definitely one for a stalker, definitely one for like multiple burglaries and stuff like that, and how they solve it. And then there's also the famous one, The Hounds of Baskerville, which is kind of where it like gets kind of like, you could be mystical, could be like secret government stuff that goes on. And that's what it felt like this one was trying to be, but they never read the source material, and so they didn't know what the hell it was about. And they were just like, weird government shit, let's do it. So I didn't like issue number two. I didn't like how it was written. I didn't like how it was drawn. I just didn't like it. My bad. Do better. I'm so sorry. But then issues three and four were really, really, really good. Issue number three was with the stalker.
Yeah. I liked that art a lot in that one.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny because I like the art for that one, but I actually like the art for issue number four when it gets into kind of like more into the story of Irene Irene Adler, and how she's like a singer and like a singer, songstress, performer, which I think really fits with her. Oh, sorry. Irene Aldero. Not Irene Adler. Irene Aldero. And it turns into like this whole thing. It was just, I really loved it, and not just because I really love the character of Irene Adler, and I think they did a really good job of kind of reinterpreting her and readapting her into the storyline. I'm iffy on issue number five. I think if we had more context between issues four and five about how the distance between Watson and Holmes was created, I would have been like, yo, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, definitely.
I do think that the story was solid. I liked the artwork because it felt softer, even though there was a gunfight going on.
Yeah.
And, oh God, I'm pretty sure we know the writer. Or, like, we've read their other stuff before.
Greg Anderson Alsay. Yeah. We interviewed him.
Yes.
Yeah.
For
his, and so, like,
yeah, with his shirt off.
Yeah, for the East Nana comics that he does. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, like, Jen likened him to Neil Gaiman.
No, I am. Well, yeah, we did do did. That. No, we both did, definitely.
Very, very grand, and a very grand storytelling style. And you and I was like, and I, you could see it, they said too, but I just didn't think that they gave him the build up enough for it. So it kind of like felt like it just happened. And I was just like, okay, but what happened? What happened in between issues 4 and 5 for this to happen? And I just felt very lost. But I did like if I had more build up to it, if I had more context for it, I think I would have liked it more. And I felt what it would have felt more, I guess, touching as how it was meant to be. But I was just like, I have no context. I don't know what happened. I mean, I can probably guess from the Watson and Holmes, just like the general lore, but I wanted more. I wanted to know how they got there. Give me the story. So I just, that was my big, that's my big issue for 5, is that I didn't feel like there was enough story. Like the emotion was there, but there wasn't enough context for the emotion.
And look at me, from somebody who always reads the back matter completely read over, where it literally tells you on the back, an anthology style volume with 5 tales.
Girl, you and me both. Sometimes I read it, sometimes I don't. I bet you if I, like, the book is somewhere here in the house. The book is somewhere here in the house. I read it.
The other thing I didn't realize is this is actually volume 2, which doesn't matter because the first volume was also, I believe, written in the same style. So it's not like it's a continuing storyline. It's just all different takes on the Watson and Holmes
Tell
duo.
Me why we both read the same back matter. And in my mind, I can see it when, what is it, Brandon?
Uh-huh.
The first, he writes like I was honored like that they chose me to write their 6th issue. And I was like, 6th issue? Are you writing the first one?
Yeah.
I never even looked at the volume. I just assumed we were at volume 1.
Uh-huh.
You know what? Ignore me. Never mind. Everything I just said, my observational skills, awful. Maybe, who knows? Maybe issue 2 was written well. Out, but you know,
well, I enjoyed them all. The second one was a little convoluted. I didn't know where it was going. It was one of those where the FBI agents are sitting Watson and Holmes down, and it's like, okay, tell me what happened from the beginning. So it was almost going back and forth. So it was like they're telling us what they did on certain days on certain things that happened for this case. And that really took me out of the story. And then I didn't even realize it was a super serum for soldiers. And I didn't even know who the bad guy was, except there was a woman, but we never really meet her. So how could we follow the story and say, is it that guy? Is it that guy? You know, like that was a little, it just didn't read like a murder mystery, because that was a whole different person that I wasn't even introduced in the issue. So, but the artwork, what I felt, was pretty solid. And I loved the issue 5. I actually was, you know how like they use social media to propel the story, and it's a bunch of kids like posting on social media. I had to ask my nephew, what does this mean? Because they have their own little language, and I'm like, I'm trying, guys. I'm trying to learn your language, you youngsters. But I thought that was cool. But yes, I did feel a little bit of a disconnect with the. I was reading all these stories where they're partners, and then all of a sudden there's a 5-year gap, and the son is kind of still sort of the same age. I don't get it, but. I don't know where that issue was taken out of to put into the second book, but otherwise, and then there's this lady that it says to be continued. There's this woman with this Phantom of the Opera tattoo, and she looks over her shoulder and she's like, says something about men, and then at the bottom of the page,
never trust a man, no matter how good he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something
that's Irene. That's yeah. Irene Adler. That's Irene Aldero.
And that took me out because the art was different. She looked completely different. They didn't bridge that to me for me, and I didn't see that tattoo on the next story. You know what I mean? Like if we saw that tattoo, I'm like, oh, that's a lady. That's hers. That's her. She's there, you know. But I didn't see the tattoo. That would have been kind of good for me visually to connect her at the end of that one chapter, and then seeing the tattoo on the next chapter and saying, "Okay, that's her." You know what I mean?
So that's the one you're talking about.
Yes.
I also noticed that she looked completely different here, but the tattoo is here. It's just covered. Yeah. And I noticed it and I looked really close because you can see the mask. So yeah, it's there, but she has a cuff around it. But yeah, that also took me out because I'm like, there's the tattoo, but that ain't the same lady I just saw.
I just attributed it to different artists.
See, at this point, I still didn't know. But also, I was interested in the track list. I wondered, is this just her made-up songs, or are those songs by real artists that we could listen to?
I think they're made up.
I meant to go back and look them up, but I didn't get a chance to.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They are made up because the first one is her big hit, Always the Woman.
I see.
That she was the focus of the story in that particular issue.
Right. Well, I think we've stated everything about each chapter. I think we're ready to rate it. What is our rating scale, Kristen?
So our rating scale is a scale of 1 to 3 conchas, 3 being the most conchas that Jen's mom ever let her eat in one sitting. So that was the best. If a book is more than 3 conchas, then we have our own unique rating that we each individually use. I'm going to start and I'm going to give it 2 conchas. I really, the first story, I'm giving the whole panaderia. I love that story. I love the topic. I love the fact that Brandon specifically had this storyline in his mind, and when he was offered this job, he knew that it would fit right in, and he wanted to do it respectfully, and he wanted to give it basically a spotlight because it is an issue. And so I think that that story was done really, really well. But overall, there were some that I just was not able to follow along with. And as a whole, I'm going to give it 2 conchas.
I am going to give it the exact same rating. The first chapter was really amazing. It kind of set the tone that I wanted throughout the comic. I didn't get blindsided by the artwork, yet the stories were a little bit different, and the chapters, I mean. So just like you, I'm going to give the first chapter, the whole panaderia, and the book as a whole 2 conchas. What about you, Jen?
Well, I was going to give the whole thing 2 conchas, but the way that you guys like that first chapter really was standout. So I'm just going to follow along. The first chapter is definitely worth 3 conchas. I think it was really well done. I think it was really, it's a knockout way of kind of introducing that mm-hmm. volume. Because, I mean, shit, they could have put that in volume 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Get it out of order. I don't care. It was really, really good. Definitely, but I think it speaks for itself, the fact that we could pick up volume 2 and not even notice that it was volume 1.
That's a good. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I think that's pretty good for an anthology series. Mm-hmm. So that first chapter, definitely 3 conchas. The whole book in total, 2 conchas, mostly because I just did not like issue number 2. And I'll say it, and I'll keep saying it. First chapter, 3 conchas, entire panaderia. Overall book, 2 conchas.
And that has been our book review. All right, guys, now it's time for En la Libreria. Jen, what do you have for us today?
So today I have Mustn't Tell, number one and number two, an all-ages horror comic.
Ooh, I love those.
Over the Garden Wall meets The Haunting of Hill House in this all-ages five-issue horror comic series. So this is being created by Tommy Stella from Poughkeepsie, New York. Tom Stella is a comic writer from New York who is trying to make his creative dreams come true one stapled pamphlet at a time. And he has a history of backing on Kickstarter, but this is his first project on here. So the story synopsis that they have right here is, but that's the thing about your childhood fears. They've been there since the start. They're your oldest friend. They infect your foundation and grow like a mold. They burrow deep into your bones, and no matter what you do, they never leave. And then they have splash art.
I'm already creeped out.
Of like a hand over a kid in the dark. Creepy. What is Mustn't Tell? What if Disney made a horror movie? That's our pitch for Mustn't Tell, a five-issue all-ages series written by Tommy Stella, illustrated by John McDaniel, and haunted by B.A. Roth. We set out to capture the whimsical vibes of after-school playdates and sleepovers, while also making them terrifying. The story follows our two leads, Ryan and Jake, as they confront the monster haunting Ryan's house. This story is full of twists, heart, laughs, and most importantly, moments that you'll hate us for writing. Playing with art styles in innovative ways, Stella and company are off to a great and intriguing start. This is a quote from Ethan Sachs, author of A Haunted Girl. Then we get an introduction to the boys. Meet Ryan, who's in purple, and Jake, who is in green in the splash art that they have here. They're the two kids in your fifth grade class that spent recess debating which starter Pokemon was best and what superhero could eat the most sandwiches. They love video games, movies, and whatever else will distract them from the monster in Ryan's closet. The monster haunts Ryan every single night, leaving him exhausted and anxious. This changes when he finally finds the courage to tell Jake, who decides that the only way to fix this monster problem is to kill this monster problem. Mustn't Tell perfectly captures the childhood terror of the shadows lurking in closets, which may just be bigger than they appear. A quote by Maggie Lovett from Collider. The monster. When creating this monster, we were inspired by childhood fears. All the stuff you'll eventually outgrow. The dark. Clowns, imaginary monsters, etc., you know. But one very specific fear that Tommy had growing up was when things looked uncannily out of place. You'd see it on TV shows sometimes. A cartoon suddenly having a live-action character, or maybe a random use of claymation, we know, so scary. So our goal was to make the monster look like it didn't belong in this fun, cartoony world. And with that, we got a second artist to just draw the monster. Meet B.A. Roth's special little guy. He's special, all right. And then they have a really creepy picture of him. And it says, and this is him in a good mood. B.A.'s terrifying realistic art blends perfectly, imperfectly, with John's playful Saturday morning cartoon style. We are very proud of how the haunt pages turned out. Then they go on to rewards. The campaign is for issues 1 and 2 of the 5-issue series. Issue 1 is 23 pages long, while issue 2 is 28. Each reward tier, besides the thank you and PDF tier, will get you physical copies of both issues. All international orders, non-US, will receive a free signed postcard. As a thank you for paying the extra shipping costs. Oh, honey, I want it too. We want to reward you with a special bonus gift from the team. The postcard will feature the campaign's thumbnail art on one side and our signatures on the other. Every single backer who pledges $5 and up will be included in a thank you section of issue 1. Please let us know if you do not want to be included after you pledge. We'll also be making a variant cover for each issue. Issue 1's variant was done by the insanely talented artist Cheryl. And they have a link to her Instagram. And issue 2's variant riffs on another of Tommy and BA's comics, The Days. And then they have a picture of all four of them. They have a lot more. They have some pages posted up to show that, you know, they've done the work. It's on there. But Tommy Stella is the comic book writer. John McDaniel is the comic artist, and B.A. Roth is a queer comic and character illustrator, and he is the one who's doing the horror, the monster in the comic. So issue one is fully complete, and issue two only has a few pages remaining. They are working with a local printer on everything, so once they've reached all their fundraising goals, printing and mailing would take about roughly about 1 to 2 months. And then they have their like risk and challenges warning, but they are looking to get, they're looking at a goal of $4,000. They're currently at $2,496 with 55 backers and 28 days to go.
Oh, cool.
You can always make a pledge without expecting a reward. And then there's also a general support thank you one that they've added here that is also at $1. But the base pledge to get a PDF copy of the book is $5. And if you want the physical copy and of issues 1A and 2A covers, it is $15, which is actually pretty good, especially if they're working with a local printing place. So $15 for both for physical copies of both 1 and 2. And then they have another $15 one for the variant covers. And then it's $25 to get all four covers. After that, they have a $50 pledge to get a sketch from John, as well as the comics. And then they have another $50 pledge for a haunting sketch from B.A. Roth, as well as the comics. And then it keeps going on from there. I'm wondering if they have a retailer one. They don't have a retailer one, which is sad. I think they should.
Yeah.
but I love, love, love the concept. I think all ages, it seems incongruous, but all ages horror is a thing. I mean, Coraline.
Oh, I yes.
Love Coraline. But that is an all ages horror. What's her name?
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist? Not in all ages horror.
There was a child.
I might have watched it.
I know, me too, as a kid.
All of us watched it when we definitely shouldn't have, but you know, that's how it be.
The one that comes to mind is Emily Carroll's Through the Woods.
Yes, I was going to say Through the Woods. I love that book.
Yes.
I have it on my bookshelf.
And it like was it. So well done. As a full-grown adult woman, I was creeped out. And it was definitely specifically geared towards all ages. So I'm very intrigued by this book, and I wish they did have a retailer. A retailer tier. I'd love to be able to have that in a shop, but I'm excited for it. Even $5 for the PDF. I just want to read it. It sounds really cool.
Definitely, yeah. And so it's Mustn't Tell number 1 and 2 on Kickstarter. And Mustn't Tell, for those who can't spell, no judgment here. Literacy can be learned. is MUSTN apostrophe T. And then tell TELL. and it's on Kickstarter. Definitely check it out. I think it sounds amazing. It looks amazing. And definitely want to read it.
All right, guys. Now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
So today, even though those of you listening might be listening further into March, but today is actually the last day. It is leap year. It is the last day of February. Today is February 29th.
Oh, yeah.
And it is still, that means it is still Black History Month. So in honor, we read Watson and Holmes, and also the project that I'm sharing today during Juntos y Fuertes, which is the segment of our podcast where we highlight projects by members of marginalized communities, is a comic convention. It's the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention. So the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention was originally slated to be called the Pan African Comic Convention or First World Comic Con, Comics Con. It's an annual gathering of comic book artists, writers, and their fans and retailers who are interested in discussing, buying and selling comic books, sci-fi, action figures, and related material by and or about Black superheroes, superpowered characters, and adventures. In addition, the convention also features panel discussions, self-publishing, and graphic art workshops for aspiring creators, and film screenings of works of veterans and amateurs alike. The convention is held in Philadelphia each May, preceded by a reception awards ceremony. The ECBACC is the first bona fide Black comic book convention in Philadelphia, and it serves as a replicable model for community-based comic book conventions. The ECBACC has successfully cultivated images of Black superpowered characters and has effectively served as a nexus, conduit, and catalyst for Black comic book creators, their colleagues, and fans since 2002. So even though I'm reading, telling you about this in February, and you might be listening to this in March, that is more than enough time if you are on the East Coast to make plans, even if you're not on the East Coast, to make plans to attend the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention. It is their goal is to promote literacy and creativity in youth through comic book writing and drawing workshops. And they want to offer audiences exposure to some of the leading Black artists and writers in the comic book industry. You can find out more information about this organization and about this convention at ecbacc.com.
All right, guys, now it's time for saludos. And saludos goes out today to Sandy Fonseca. You can follow Sandy at on Instagram at kkiteindiayellowaalpha9510. That's Kaya9510. Tell us more about Sandy Fonseca, Kristen.
So I believe we met Sandy at WonderCon maybe last year, maybe the year before, who knows, but we did meet her. And she describes herself as just a dorky artist from Southern California who loves anime and games of all forms. She treasures her favorite childhood shows for all the lessons that they imparted on her as a kid and have held on to that inner child in herself throughout the years. She really gets a lot of joy of sharing the love that she has for these shows, and she really likes to offer the stuff that she makes in those fandoms in artist alleys. So if you go to her website, which is nightglimmer.bigcartel.com, you find a whole bunch of her fan art products that she makes. She has Twisted Wonderland Shaker keychains. She does a lot of Digimon. She has stickers and keychains. She has Yu-Gi-Oh! She has Monster Rancher. I don't know what that is, but the pins are cute. and skate charms, skate boy charms, and tote bags. Just a lot of really cool stuff from the fandoms that she loves and enjoys. Again, you can find her at Twitter and Instagram at Kaya9510, but you can also find her on Etsy and Twitter at Night Glimmer. That's NightGlimmer.
All right, guys, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you. And now you can watch us on YouTube. Where else can they find us, Kristen?
You can find us at our website, which is at comadresecomics.com. comicbookindustry.com, where you can find out more information about where you can find us on social media, and also actually listen to some of our episodes.
Absolutely. Also, you know that we're going to be in Modesto in March, and also we're going to be walking around at WonderCon. So if you see us, stop us, take a picture with us, because we're super famous. And no, we really aren't famous, but if you see us and you recognize us, stop by, say hello, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye.
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 And that's on Period Network.